The next case for argument is 19-1507, 2020 Vision versus Vision Precision. Judge Wallach has just observed that 2020 is a good number to start the new year with.
It is a great number to start the year with. May it please the court, Lee Marshall on behalf of 2020 and 2020. The district court in this case construed three claim terms in a manner that excluded preferred embodiments from the scope of the claim.
If we affirm on eye care practitioner, does that end the case?
Your Honor, there is a consent judgment in this case that expressly says, and I'm looking for it right now, that any that the change of any, this is paragraph 12 of the consent decree.
On appendix consent, 21.
Yes, thank you. That says, Your Honor, that...
Oh, it's appendix 24, which it has.
Yes, exactly. I'm looking at paragraph 12. Should the court's Markman order be altered in any way on appeal, nothing shall be deemed an admission, that the defendants are entitled to judgment of non-infringement. It goes on, paragraph 13, where we reserve the right to appeal from the court's construction of each of the three disputed claim terms. So, Your Honor, we would submit that... That all three claim terms are at issue here. Now, with respect to eye care practitioner.
Well, let me just see if I understand that. If we were, because I kind of was thinking based on claim paragraph 11, based on the, of each of, it talks about each of the three disputed claims terms, and then it goes on to say, we agree that defendants are entitled to judgment as a matter of law on the issue of non-infringement because defendants systems do not infringe the 62 patent on three separate grounds. So I took that to mean, and I didn't think you were disputing the fact that if we were to affirm on any one of those three claim constructions, there would be non-infringement.
I think that's accurate, Your Honor.
That's accurate. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Thank you. So let me ask you a follow-up, though, on the eye practitioner thing to interrupt Judge Wallach, which is it's a little odd to me because even though the claim construction dealt with this question of whether it was a practitioner or a doctor or a technician, there was a second dispute related to eye practitioners, which you cover in the briefing, which is whether or not it had to be the same person. Mm-hmm. Irrespective of whether it's a technician or a doctor. So if, hypothetically, if we were to agree with you that it doesn't have to be a practitioner, but disagree with you that it has to be, and think that it has to be the same person, would that be a sufficient basis for affirming that finding of non-infringement on the eye practitioner?
No, Your Honor, I do not believe so.
Then why are we arguing about it if it's not relevant to infringement? That you know what I'm talking about. I may have misstated it, or I may have stated it inartfully, but you know what I'm talking about? That second part of the eye practitioner dispute.
Your Honor, my understanding is if the three claim terms are disagreed with or the constructions are disagreed with in any respect, then that invalidates the stipulation of non-infringement.
Wait a minute. So now we're going back to even
Okay. So I may have said that too quickly.
Okay.
What I mean by that is if all three of them are modified in any respect, then that would invalidate the stipulation of non-infringement.
So it would take all three.
So, correct.
So if we just stick on practitioners and we disagree with you, that ends it.
You would have to fully agree with the district court's construction in every respect.
So what happens if we only agree with part of the district court's construction?
Then that would invalidate the stipulation of non-infringement.
Well, it would go back for something, right? I mean, what was the import of the you were arguing about not just whether or not it was a technician or a doctor, but you were also arguing about whether or not the person had to be the same person doing the steps of the claims. That's something you covered in your briefs and so forth, right?
Right.
Right about that was an issue in dispute. So I assumed that that had something to do with the stipulation of non-infringement, given that the district court said it didn't have to be the same person. Right?
Your Honor, my understanding is, and I've been steeped in the claim construction issues and less steeped involved in the infringement issues because I was not in the district court, but my understanding is that the issue of the one or more, or the issue of does it have to be the same person, improves the infringement argument, but is not a requirement for our argument below. So it's a question of, is it dispositive? I think the answer is no. Is it helpful? Sure.
Now, technician review and evaluate examination data to provide a health report.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I missed your question.
Can a technician review and evaluate examination data in order to provide a health report?
Yes.
What in the record supports that?
Well, I think the one thing that's in the record that supports that is the agreed upon construction of customer evaluation data, which does not say, for example, that the customer evaluation data has to be a diagnosis or a prescription.
Can an unlicensed individual diagnose eye conditions and write prescriptions?
Your Honor, there are some statutory citations in the record, but there's no extrinsic evidence in the record. But I would point the court, they relied heavily on the Florida statutory scheme below, and I would point the court to Florida Statute 463.009. That includes the use of non-licensed supportive personnel who may be delegated duties under supervision and perform data gathering, preliminary testing, prescribed visual therapy, and related duties. And so long as the ultimate, I think, under the Florida scheme, the ultimate diagnosis or ultimate prescription is done by the licensed professional, the non-licensed professional can be involved in the process, can review the data and evaluate the data. And that's particularly true here, where it was agreed they originally they had diagnosis and prescription in customer evaluation data, but they pulled that out. And the agreed upon construction of that does not include those things. So you can have, and there's numerous tests, I think there are about 11 tests described in columns 29 through 31 of the patent. And there's nothing in there that says all of those tests have to be reviewed and evaluated by a licensed professional. There's nothing that says that.
Let me refer you to 1741 to 1743 in the appendix. During patent prosecution, in order to overcome a 103 rejection, the applicant explained that audio response system did not mean an interactive voice system that simply permits consumers to access a service provider over a phone or do basic data entry. They said audio response system was different because it interacts with a customer during the subjective portion of the eye examination in an automated and iterative process. How is that not a clear and unmistakable disclaimer?
Yeah, I don't think it is, Your Honor, because certainly the audio response system is involved in the iterative process during the subjective testing. But there are examples. For example, the asynchronous testing of Claim 25 is a clear example where that's completely automated. And there are, if you look at the patent in column 32, the patent describes varying levels of automation and assistance. This is column 32, line 4. And it distinguishes, Your Honor, between asynchronous and synchronous examinations. And in the asynchronous examinations, this is column 32, line 13, those are described as fully automated processes, Whereas the synchronous examinations, and this is column 33, lines 49 through 64, talk about that assistance from remote practitioners may occur synchronously and allow the remote practitioner to monitor and control the ophthalmic equipment and instruments and or the administration of the tests through the real-time connection with the customer diagnostic center. So this is a clear reference to the fact that, yes, in a asynchronous testing that's fully automated, then sure, you're going to have the remote practitioners divorced from the from the process.
Okay. Let me take you to some areas where I'm quite concerned. On page 3 of the blue brief, you say the district court, quote, required the parties to ghostwrite proposed Markman orders and then adopted Vision Precision's proposed order virtually verbatim. I practiced law in federal courts for 20 years before I went on the bench. And a lot of the time, courts required the submission of a draft order from each side. Is that the same as ghostwriting?
Well, I think... Have
you ever filed a proposed order?
Certainly, Your Honor. And there are occasions where a court will use passages from a proposed order in the final order. And there's nothing wrong with that.
I've seen courts strike proposed and sign it.
I've certainly seen that where it is a non-substantive order.
I've seen them strike the word proposed from the word order granting summary judgment.
Fair enough, Your Honor. I think our suggestion here is that in the context of this de novo review, I think this order is entitled to a bit of skepticism because it was written almost entirely, with the exception of a few edits.
I went through it line by line.
There were a few edits, Your Honor. I agree with that.
On page 19 to 20 of the blue brief, you say that the district court's Markman order should be viewed with a heightened degree of skepticism as effectively amounting to a surreply from Vision Precision. So are you saying that the district court was actually an agent of Vision Precision? What in the record supports that?
We are not saying that, Your Honor. I would not go so far as to say that.
Who else would file a surreply?
Perhaps the rhetoric got a bit ahead of us, Your Honor.
But perhaps it did, yeah.
The point here is that this order could be viewed with some skepticism, but in either case, what we're talking about is de novo review, and the district court's determinations here, which there was no findings based on the extrinsic evidence.
Precision says your ghostwriting argument is waived because you didn't move for reconsideration or argue that the district court had not exercised independent judgment at any time between the Markman order and the consent judgment. Did you raise the ghostwriting or the agent of the other side to the district court, by any chance?
No, Your Honor. Once the order was adopted by the court, we filed our notice of appeal.
So is that the point? So you've made these assertions, which you kind of concede now, where your rhetoric got a little ahead of you. But what was the point? You weren't asking for recusal. You weren't asking for reversal for that basis. You were just trying to plant a seed in our mind that we should be a little more skeptical about what the district court did because of the so-called, your word, ghostwriting.
Well, Your Honor, we did not assert that it requires per se reversal. We certainly did not assert that. But we do think that the reasoning of the order is... I think it's was pretty clear that it was
So we get this case, and it's we're reviewing a Markman order. So one side gives one alternative. This is the construction we want on this term. The other side gives the other. We decide the other side's right. We agree with them. We agree with all of their arguments, and we reject all of your arguments for the reasons they give. What do we have to do? Change the words around to make sure we won't be accused of ghostwriting? We have to come up with different words. We agree with the claim construction. we agree because of X, Y, and Z, which is precisely what the other side has argued. I mean, I think the concern you're hearing from us is because we do this for a living, and it's kind of hard to get these cases and to really have quite, you know, unpleasant accusations leveled against a district court judge for something that I think may be fairly common practice, maybe.
Your Honor, I can't say that I've seen another claim construction order done this way.
Well, perhaps the PTAB often will say, and we see a lot of these PTAB opinions, the patent owner argued these five things, the petitioner argued these five things, and what they say about the petitioner is we embrace their conclusions and analysis in their entirety. End of story. Right? Have you seen those?
Yes, okay. Your Honor.
Would that present the same sort of problems that you're putting forth here?
I take the court's point, Your Honor. I would like to just briefly actually hit the substantive part of the claim construction, and the court imposed a licensing requirement on eye care practitioner. There's a clear section of the specification that says that while the eye care practitioner may be a licensed optometrist or ophthalmologist, it also states that the eye care practitioner may be any eye care professional or other individual who is qualified, licensed, or otherwise capable. Then the spec goes on and talks about how technicians are capable of administering tests and procedures, and that's at column 7, line 39 through 44, for example.
Your time's almost up, but can I just circle back just so there's no dispute, because I was a little confused by some of your responses, and maybe that's my problem. But going back to the very first point, let's assume hypothetically that we were to agree with you on the practitioner point and on the teleconferencing point, but to agree with the district court on this final claim limitation. Do you agree that if we were able to affirm the district court's claim construction on that third item, it would be sufficient basis for affirming the judgment of non-infringement?
If you agreed with the district court's claim construction on that third basis in its entirety without any modifications, then yes, I would agree with that.
Thank you.
I'll save my remaining time for rebuttal.
You've used it, but we'll restore some rebuttal.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Joseph Bain of Schutz and Bowen on behalf of the appellees.
Do you agree with your opposing counsel that if we affirm on eye care practitioner, for example, that's the end of the case?
I agree that would be the end of the case. I think number paragraph 11 of our consent judgment includes a stipulation that makes that very clear.
What about if the only thing we were to agree with the district court on would be the second portion of the eye practitioner analysis? In other words, we would disagree that you have to be a doctor, but we would agree that you have to be the same person all through the procedure. Would that be a sufficient basis to affirm, or would we have to send it back?
It would be a sufficient basis to affirm, Your Honor. The impact and the import and the intention of paragraph 12 is purely in the event of a remand. What was the concern was is that if you change the claim construction in any way that you felt on all three.
But he didn't do a claim, he or she didn't do a claim construction on the second piece. It's clearly a dispute between the parties on the second piece being that has to be whoever this eye practitioner is, it has to be the same person throughout. Even though the parties seem to be disputing it as part of a claim construction issue, it's his claim construction, the one that we've just got in the little box, doesn't even talk about that piece of it, right? You know what I'm saying?
I'm not sure I understand, Your Honor. If you're referring to that there wasn't really a claim construction on whether it has to be the same person?
Yes, the same person throughout. There seem to be two pieces of this eye practitioner dispute. Maybe I misunderstood.
Well, they're intertwined in this way, Your Honor. We believe that the intrinsic record, the specification, the file history, and the plain language of the claim itself makes clear that the eye care practitioner has to be a licensed professional. And the fact that it's the same person, according to the claim, the eye care practitioner is assigned two tasks: administering the examination and review and evaluation. And because that has to be the same person, that actually reinforces that it has to be basically an eye doctor and not a technician.
Okay, so it's not doesn't stand on itself being the same person. You just use it as a tool to reinforce your view of the eye.
That's our perspective on it. But by the way, Your Honor, whether it's singular or plural, what's important is ultimately everything centers down on who does one skill in the art believe can review and evaluate.
Yeah, your friend seems to believe he can cite a Florida statute to say that a technician can review and evaluate examination data to provide a health report. Is that true?
I'm not certain that that is, Your Honor, but I don't know that that's in the record, and I don't know that that's an issue that's been argued before. And more importantly, that's extrinsic evidence. I can stay within the four corners of the
okay,
intrinsic
let's
record.
Okay, let's stay in the intrinsic record then
yes.
And look at the specification. It seems to me the specification is quite clear. It said an eye practitioner may be any eye care professional or other individual who is qualified, licensed, or otherwise capable of administering a proper. Whether or not, as a matter of law, you have to be licensed in order to be capable of administering, let's stay at the four corners. The spec says, or otherwise capable. So the spec itself, clearly in my read, says you don't have to be licensed. You can be otherwise capable of administering or monitoring one or more eye tests.
Your Honor, that sole sentence cannot be read in isolation. It has to be read in the context of the entire patent as well as the file history. And when one skill in the art, and by the way, the person of ordinary skill in the art, according to 2020, which the court accepted for purposes of the Markman, is himself or herself an ophthalmologist with 2 years of training and some experience in IT. So the question is, what would an ophthalmologist think when reading the specification? They would not read that sentence in isolation, Your Honor. What they would instead look at for reading the entire patent is every single instance in which an eye care professional is discussed, it is contrasted with a technician, a physician's assistant, or the like. And every instance, notwithstanding the representation.
No, but the problem, I mean, I understand what you're saying, kind of, but one could read, make your point, reaching the exact opposite conclusion. The fact that in other portions of the spec, the person writing it was clearly capable of distinguishing and of stating a distinction between certain types of doctors demonstrates that the use of this very broad language is meaningful. Meaningful mean what is or otherwise capable of doing it possibly mean other than you can be a technician, you don't have to be a doctor. What does it mean? What's an alternative meaning for the sentence that I gave you from the specification?
The person skilled in the art reading that sentence in the context of all the other disclosures that consistently say eye care practitioners do the reviewing and evaluating, whereas the assistance technicians and such do not. And one other point I want to...
Why don't we look at the language? It's column 11, lines 8 through 16. So how would you rewrite this? Tell me how someone would read that.
Well, I actually get right to my point, Your Honor. I believe a person of skill in the art, the ophthalmologist, when he reads this based on his knowledge and also what he reads in the 25 other examples, the only way to reconcile that sentence is that it's describing a licensed professional. He would not read it as he would not tease out of it this sort of after-the-fact, litigation-driven construction that what it's really saying is anybody and everybody, including technicians.
Well, let me ask you this. Is there any statutory authority which allows an unlicensed individual to diagnose conditions and write prescriptions?
Not that we're aware of, Your Honor. And I believe that the record that in the briefing, that the Markman briefing we set forth below, cited the statutes of every 50 state and presented that these all require that it be a licensed doctor. Okay. One other important part of the intrinsic record that I think confirms this, the two prior art references, get you the names, the Franz reference and the Scalaro reference, which are, again, what the person skilled in the art brings into the date of the invention when this application was filed, both of them use the word eye care practitioner synonymously with a doctor and distinguish it from a technician. That's at Appendix 188 for Scolaro and Appendix 1944 for Franz. So you've got that intrinsic evidence establishing what one skill in the art knew about an eye care practitioner being a licensed professional before he even reads the patent.
Can I ask you, maybe I'm missing something about this case. If it's the fact that you couldn't possibly ever do this, practice this in any state unless you were this doctor, then why is this an infringement, non-infringing point? How could you possibly be doing it if you're not legally allowed to do it? Why would that get you off the hook for infringement?
Well, this ties into the second thing that you began with, Your Honor, which is the idea of, does it have to be the same person that's doing the administration of the test and the review and the evaluation? Because, as again, this consent judgment for purposes of appeal was based on these three constructions as well as our representation for how our system works. And if you can read the overview of our system as we described during the Markman hearing, which was only given for the purposes of context, we explained to the court that we have a technician that in a non-automated way does the initial part, does the back and forth with, which is clear, A or B. If you've ever had your eyes examined, in the doctor or the technician switches.
So some of the stuff, in your view, some of the stuff can be done by a technician. But because, in your view, the claim requires a doctor and the claim requires the same person for all, is that?
That's correct, because the technician can do an examination in terms of the mechanics of switching the lenses, but once that data is gathered, it's then given to a doctor. And this claim, there's no question, this claim requires that it's a doctor, an eye care practitioner, that does the review and evaluation to issue the report. And in our view, as a matter of antecedent basis, the selected practitioner that does that review and evaluation also has to be involved in the eye examination.
It seems to me that column 11, starting at line 10, line 11, is getting cute and saying, but some legislature may say someone else other than a qualified licensed optometrist or ophthalmologist maybe licensed to do this kind of stuff, and if so, we're going to cover it.
Where does it say this, Your Honor?
Column 11, line 11 forward. That is the language that says, or otherwise capable of administering or monitoring one or more health and visual acuity tests, and providing diagnoses and so on. So they're saying it's a doctor, or someone licensed to be a doctor of some sort.
The measure of what the ordinary meaning of eye care practitioner is to be taken at the time of the invention when the application is filed. The intrinsic record, particularly the two, the Scolaro and the Franz coming into the filing of the application, coupled with the fact that 2020, and we don't disagree for purposes of appeal, that the person skilled in the art is himself or herself an ophthalmologist, would come with the knowledge that, yes, doctors write prescriptions and diagnose disease. Technicians do not. And when you come with that perspective and you read the entire specification, and again,
are there people who do work on eyes, medical doctors who do work on eyes, who are neither ophthalmologists or opticians?
Optometrist is the other professional.
Can you move to the third term that we were spending some time with your friend on, the automation stuff?
Yes.
And you're relying on prosecution history. You know, our cases have been pretty stringent on what can qualify as a disclaimer or
yes.
not. So how do we get around? I guess it's 1735 and 1736.
I'm going to answer your question, Your Honor, but I don't think this panel needs to go so far as to conclude that it's a disclaimer. I will answer, but let me just give you the perspective that first, of course, we always start with the claims and the specification. And in the claim, we think that it is clear that it's the server that has to do the administration. Okay, it's not the doctor. The server has to do the administration, and particularly what's most important is the server has to do this iterative process of the subjective portion. And when you read the acts that the server must do, which is use the audio response system to ask the questions and return the answers, automatically, I mean the word's clear, automatically adjust based on those answers, and then finally detect when to stop. Just within the four corners of the claim, that suggests automation. Then when you go to the spec, you discover that the only embodiment that supports that is this automated refractive process, which does not involve
the doctor.
But
there's another embodiment that doesn't. There are two embodiments.
What's the second embodiment, Your Honor? I'm not aware there's a second one involving automation.
Right. That's right. It doesn't involve automation.
You're talking about where the doctor, before, during, and after, participates using a different component. There's nothing in the, this is the other important thing. This is an open-ended claim. There's nothing to prohibit the doctor from supervising, monitoring, chiming in, having a conversation with the patient versus via video teleconferencing. But that's not to say that video teleconferencing is a subset of this automated process. Those two things can go on in parallel. This is made clear by the spec, where the automated process embodiment is described and then says, in addition, the doctor can have a real-time communication on top of that. This is confirmed by the claims. Claim 15 adds this additional feature of the doctor coming in via teleconferencing. The important thing is that what that means is that the automated process of Claim 13 is distinct from the teleconferencing that's added as an additional option in Claim 15 as well as in the specification. So now coming to your question, in view of that, we believe that the file history simply corroborates that. But we think it corroborates it so compellingly because of all the times that they tell the examiner this is an automated process that does not require the involvement of a human. We believe that it is a clear and unmistakable disclaimer. But I don't believe that you have to go so far. If you're not persuaded by that, I don't think that that prevents you from affirming on this third ground, because the claim language itself clearly, to one skilled in the art, an ophthalmologist, clearly conveys an automated process. It uses the word, if for no other reason, Judge, it uses the word automatically. This is reconciled with this sole example in the specification, which, yes, does add the additional layer of a human being involved, but with different components. And then thirdly, the third part of the intrinsic
record. So is that second process covered by the claims as well? It covers automate and an automated process, and it covers everything else as well?
Well, it covers it in the sense of being an open-ended claim. At a minimum, certainly, the claim requires the automated process. It would not be a basis of non-infringement if the doctor on top of that also had a video link where he was also at the same time having a conversation. For example, the thing's working on an automated basis, the doctor's supervising and he sees that the software's messed up, okay? Or maybe the patient didn't clearly answer and there's some glitch in the process. The doctor might be in a supervisory capacity to intervene and say, okay, I'm going to take over and I'm going to do it the old-fashioned way, okay? But the claim, by its express language, as supported by the sole embodiment and then reconfirmed numerous times in the file history, requires, at its core, a truly automated process where the server, let's get right back to it, it's a claim for a server, and the server must administer the test, including particularly the subjective test that was added during prosecution history. If you compare Claim 14, which became patent number 13, as amended to the way it was before it was generic enough that the doctor could be the one doing it. But to overcome the examiner's rejection, they specifically added this iterative process and correctly called it truly automated, consistent with the spec, consistent with the claim language, and in the file history, we've cited in our brief numerous examples where the court has cited to the numerous examples in the file history where they've repeatedly called it automated. So I think it is a clear and unequivocal disclaimer. But you need not go that far to conclude that the court was correct.
I want to take you back to your answer to my last question, which was optometrist.
Yeah.
In column 11, starting at line 11. Let me ask you, because I was fishing, but obviously my lore wasn't bright enough. Supposing instead of optometrist to use the word eye surgeon, is that the same as an ophthalmologist?
There might be a slight distinction between those two. I think certainly an ophthalmologist is a skilled medical doctor for eye disease. An eye surgeon might have surgical skills on top.
Yes, and could an eye surgeon use this system if they wanted to diagnose long distance?
I'm assuming, I don't know the details of eye surgery's qualifications, but I'm assuming that they have the qualifications to diagnose disease in the sets of prescriptions.
So that's outside of the first part of that clause in column 11, but it puts that eye surgeon within the second part. And that's where
Well, are you drawing a distinction between qualified and licensed, Your Honor?
Sure.
Well, I think that
licensed is an eye surgeon, right? And they're working remotely with a patient in North Dakota about whom they want to get some information before they fly them into Minnesota. Can they use this equipment remotely to do an examination and obtain some information?
They perhaps can, but again, we have to keep ourselves focused on what is the specific process at issue for the non-infringement.
I know, but I'm talking about that other additional language other than ophthalmologist and
optometrist. Yeah. Yes, the answer would be if the eye surgeon has got under the necessary license and the qualification to perform this, basically it's a refractive lens, basically prescribed lenses, then he would fall into that category, or she, certainly. But what's important for purposes of non-infringement as described in the specification, as described during the Markman hearing, which is the sort of the underlying stipulation for purposes of this appeal only, is that it is a technician in a non-automated manner that is doing that initial part that Claim 13 requires be automated, and in our view has to be done by the same person that's doing the reviewing and the evaluation. And this debate about whether it's singular versus plural is really almost an aside. We think that under Harari that it is an individual eye care practitioner that's being selected, but even if it was unreasonable reason was selected to be two or more doctors, all of them under the Baldwin standard, if a professional is two, then the selected professional has to be the same two. You can't then divide the team up later. There's no basis for that, and Baldwin makes that clear.
Okay, we're far exceeded our time. You're over your time.
Oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor. Thank you very much. So on any of the three bases, you should have.
Thank you.
Your Honor, an eye surgeon would be licensed, and so they would fit within the second part of the definition as being licensed.
Mm-hmm.
But that second part of the definition also says, or otherwise capable, and that's where we think the technicians can have a role, and the specification makes that crystal clear that, in fact, the technicians are capable and do remotely control and administer and review the tests. Now, Judge, you asked the perfect question, which is why is this an issue? It's an issue because technicians do these things. And that is, in fact, what's happening in the real world. Now, my friend said that a person of ordinary skill in the art would know and understand all these things, but the only extrinsic evidence about what a person of ordinary skill in the art would know and understand is the expert report that we submitted. He describes this at appendix pages 1910 and 1911, and he says that technicians are part of what he would consider to be an eye care practitioner as one of ordinary skill in the art. Now, the issue of the audio response system and the automatically adjusting, my friend consistently confuses the asynchronous from the synchronous visual examination. And it is true that there are lots of statements in the prosecution and in the specification about the asynchronous, fully automated system, where the eye care practitioner is not involved at all. But when you're talking about the synchronous system, and there's no dispute that Claim 13 is a synchronous system, it says real time, it was amended during prosecution to make it a synchronous system, and they've admitted that. When you're talking about that system, the prosecution history clearly says that, and I'm looking at Appendix 1644 and 1645, a remotely located eye care practitioner may participate via a teleconferencing system while ophthalmic equipment at the diagnostic center is used and may be at least in part controlled remotely by the eye care practitioner to perform tests on the customer. The district court's construction specifically excludes the teleconferencing system, which the prosecution history clearly says is part of the synchronous system, the synchronous exam, and the district court's construction specifically excludes any assistance from the eye care practitioner. And that's what this prosecution history, and that's what the spec at column 33 consistently says, that the eye care practitioner is involved, is assisting, is controlling the equipment in the synchronous real-time system, which is the one at issue in claim 13. So, thank you.
Thank you. We thank both sides. The case is submitted. That concludes our proceeding for this morning.